Before we get on to the Dalajinim themselves, although of course it's going to be impossible to speak too much in half an hour, but I'd just like to make a few observations about Dalajinim in general. The first is that the Mishnah Brura brings, and as do many other poskim, the Machne Afrayim, that we are choshish to the Shittas HaPoskim, that since Dvar Torah Min HaTorah Mois is Koinos, and only Mois is Koinos Min HaTorah, even though the Rabbonon have brought in other Kinyonim, but in order to be Mekayim a Mitzvah without any Chash, the Dabat Minim should be paid for before Yom Tov, and not to rely on other Kinyonim such as Mashiach, etc. So one should settle the bill with the Soicha before Yom Tov. Whilst on the subject of Kinyonim, there's also a problem with giving the other minim to a kotan on Yom Tov. The problem is that a kotan can be koiner, but he can't be makna back again. So if one gives it to a kotan, so the kotan is koiner, he's going to be the yotze, and you'll be yotze the mitzvah of chinuch fully. However, the kotan can now not give it back to the gadol, so that it should be the Gudol's own Abaminim. Now in Eretz Yisrael, the problem is not so severe, because all one needs to do is to wait until all adults have been mekayem the mitzvah, and then you can hand it over to the kohen, and for the rest of Yom Tov, it isn't important if it's not lechem. That's the kaftan lechem b'yom harishon. However, in Chutz La'aretz, normally, this year it's not a problem either, but normally one needs it to be lechem on both days of the first days of Yom Tov. Now, this shalva is a yisodetik shalva generally in the mitzvah of chinuch. Whether the mitzvah of chinuch is only the etzem ha-mitzvah, to teach him the mitzvah, how to perform the mitzvah, or is the mitzvah of chinuch, does that also include all the protum of the mitzvah, meaning that the kotan must be shown how to do it, and it must be done in such a way by the kotan that had he been ha-godol, he would have been yotzer. And this is a machlokes haposkim, and the Mishnah Berurah discusses this, and the Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem to be machria in the Mishnah Berurah itself of the preferred method of how to do this. In the Shah Tzion, he does seem to suggest that it's best to give it to the kotun, but not as a matun al minas lahasir, to show him how to do the mitzvah, but in fact it should remain the godoil's possession. And the others bring a raya from the Mechaber, that the Mechaber says that the kotun can be the godol can help the kotun holding the etzigan lulav. Now, if the godol is helping the kotun to hold the etzigan lulav, he's obviously not relinquishing his ownership because he's still holding on to it. And the mechaber says on that shapidoma that it's well done. So one can see that the mechaber is also suggesting that one doesn't relinquish one's ownership as a baalus to the kotun, but one merely shows him how to do the mitzvah, and the Avaminim still remain Bereshus HaGodol. Now, as far as women and Avaminim are concerned, it's Machlokes the Mechaber and the Mor. The Mechaber paskens that an Amitzus Asay Shazman Gerumah, for instance, Avaminim, Sukkah, etc., women do not make a Brocha. The Ramor is Cholik, and the Ramor says that women do make a Brocha, and there are various Menhugim in this, whether women do or don't. A problem sometimes arises where the husband is used from home that women did not make a brocha, and the wife has got a previous minig that she did make a brocha. I think that the accepted shura is that in such cases the wife continues after the chasana to make a brocha as she did before. However, it stops there and it doesn't continue with the daughters, who then accept the father's minig of not making the brocha. The sheikh,
can I talk to my wife in the area? Take the aim at this year.
It's not a regea, because you will be yotze to the mitzvah, and then you'll give it to the kotan, and then afterwards it doesn't matter. Once the gedolim are yotze, you can then give it to the kotan.
And
then
you have a regea the second day in
Chutzlaret as well. Yeah, we're
Muslim.
Can
he lend it to you?
Sorry?
If it belongs to kotan, can he lend it to you?
No, shawl is no good on the first day. On the other days, it's all right.
Can he lend it to you? Can I?
No, you're not yotzer. On the first day, it must be lechem. Sure, you're not yotzer.
can the cotton lend it to me?
No, the first 2 days of chutzpah are the same.
Third day, can the cotton lend it to me?
The third day doesn't matter. Oh, the third day you can pick up one of the besmedish and use it without their permission.
Can I get it without permission?
Yes. Yeah, as long as you put it back. Yes. If you seize the besmedish, you can use it without permission. You must have steal it, of course, but you can use it and put it back. Now, briefly the din of Shachiyonu, just to give, there's an interesting ha'ora from the Bekur of Yaakov about the Baruch of Shachiyonu. Now, the Baruch of Shachiyonu we make, of course, on the first day. We do not make it on the second day. Again, this year it's not Negea. We make it on the first day, we don't make it on the second day. Now, the question is, if we've got a Sfeik of the Yomer, and there's a Shash at the first day was a Yom Choyol, so the Choyol, we've made the Shachiyonu on a Yom Choyol, why do we not make a Brucha, the Shachiyonu, on the second day when it's now Vazei Yom Tov? The answer is that even if the first day was Choyol and it was only Erev Yom Tov, but you can also make a Shachiyonu for the binding of the Lulav. So that covers up for the Mitzvah's Lulav entirely. So even if it had been Erev Yom Tov, we're still entitled to make the Shachiyonu. The problem is, points out the Bikur Yaakov, many people have got a minig, especially Bachsidim, that they make the Brucha on the Rebbe's Dalad Minim. That comes because in previous days not everybody had a Sigam Lulav, and the Rebbe's, or the Rov's, was the Mahudu one. And still many people also go over to other people who have perhaps got a more Mahudu one than theirs, and they make a Brucha on the other person. The Bikur Yaakov points out that if on the second day you then make the brucha on your own esrog and lulav, in other words, you change the meaning, there is a chashash that you may have to make a new shachiyonu, because you've not been covered by the first one since it was on another set. And so the Kuryata suggests that whichever dalad minim you use for the first day, in order to avoid any chashash of having to make a brucha shachiyonu on the second day, you should stick to the same dalad minim on the two first days of Yom Tov. The brucha has you only make a shachiyonu.
Not
here,
but any subsequent
way
you'll take a new
dalad minim. No, then it's about the yom tov. Once you've made a brucha shachiyonu on vada yom tov, you don't have to make a shachiyonu anymore. Then you're covered by your first shachiyonu. On the second day, you've made that with shachiyonu on the mitzvah, and that already covers you for the rest. The second day is vada yom tov. You don't have to rely on the asiyah, on the binding of the lulav. This year there's no problem, you make the shachiyonu on the second day. Now we make the shachiyonu, there's various manhugim of how to make the shachiyonu, how to make the first two bruchas. The problem is that we make the bruchas over lasiyoson. A brucha has to be immediately before the mitzvah. As soon as you pick up the esrog and the lulav and you're holding the esrog the right way up being the pitum at the top and the ukit at the bottom, because that's the way the esrog grows, although in the pictures you'll see it the other way around, that's because the weight of the esrog has pulled it over. But if it would be supported, the esrog emerges from the bud pitum first, then followed by the rest of the fruit. So once you pick up the lulav and the esrog, you have been mekayim the mitzvah. So if you then make the brucha, you're not making it over the siyoson immediately before the kiyum mitzvah, which lechatchila is what you're supposed to do. If you have picked it up, you still make the brucha, but lechatchila you make the bruchas before you pick them up. Now, the Mishnah Berurah points out, as other custom also do, that to actually make the bruchas whilst they're still lying on the table is unseemly thing to do. You make a brucha when you hold the chitetz mitzvah, not when they're lying on the table. So to overcome this, there are a number of suggestions how to overcome this problem. It should be over to yourself. Most people hold the esrog upside down for both bruchas, because the shechiyonu should also be over to yourself. Some have got a minute, they turn it over by the second brucha. That's because there's some poskim who allow that. I think it's beyond the end of very true about that. However, others have got kavuna. And some in the Lithuanian Shekhelet they do this because this was the Gruel's preferred way, is to have a positive kavuna that you don't want to be yotze the mitzvah, until immediately after the brucha. And this positive kavuna stops lechol hadeis you being yotze the mitzvah until you release that kavuna that you now want to be yotze the mitzvah. Others hold them apart from each other and just put them together as soon as they make the brucha. Or immediately after they finish the two bruchas, they put them together, because it's the chibah of the minim, which is the kiyum mitzvah. I would just like to point out, before we start with Esrig, one more interesting ha'orah I heard from a published leader. It's a typical ha'orah that only a Moira Ro would think of. Other people would do this all the time, and it wouldn't occur to them that there could be a problem. And that is the inyan of carrying. In a mukim where one doesn't carry on Yom Tov, if there's no Erev or doesn't rely on Erev, so the halacha is that carrying on Yom Tov is based on the principle of Metoich. That means that the Chachumim were matir carrying on Yom Tov essentially for Oichel Nefesh. That means if your next door neighbor has got some food which you need to borrow from him, then the Chachumim say, yes, you can bring that food in even if it goes through a Shusha Rabin. And the Toich Shehutro, the Tzorech Oichel Nefesh, it was they also were matir it Shaloi Tzorech Oichel Nefesh, even carrying which is not for food purposes. However, it has to be the Tzorech Ktsas. There has to be some necessity to be carrying this for Yom Tov. If it's Shloi L'Tzorech Klal, it's not necessary to carry this for Yom Tov, then you're not allowed to carry it on Yom Tov. So if someone's got, for instance, in his pocket, in a trouser pocket, he's got a key to a cupboard in his house, and there's no need for him to be carrying this key backwards and forwards to shul all the time as he walks on Yom Tov, he's not allowed to be carrying this on Yom Tov. The carrying of the key is only allowed because he needs to be able to get through his front door, and there's nowhere else to leave the key. But if the key is to an internal door, then there's no heter l'chayr to carry it in the street. Now the shaila is, why are we allowed to bring home from shul machzorim and double minim, etc.? If the machzorim are needed back at home, some people think it seems new from the machzorim or say piyutim, then the machzor can be brought back home because it's a tzorech. If the dalad minim are needed at home because there's somebody who's still going to be yod to the mitzvah at home, they can also be brought back. If, however, none of those excuses apply, then the only heter to bring back the dalad minim is because of the fear that the next morning you will be unlikely to find them in shul. And for security, you're allowed to bring them back home. Now, those people who are fortunate enough to have, for instance, parents or parents-in-law who live in the area and drop in on the way back from shul on Yom Tov to say good Yom Tov, or perhaps go to visit somebody who was unable to come to shul on Yom Tov to wish him good Yom Tov, as soon as they come into a private home, then there's no reason for them to remove the dalad minim and carry on home with them if there's nobody at home who still needs the dalad minim, because one can perfectly well leave them in a corner and come and collect them on Motzei Yom Tov. Now, it's quite true that it's inconvenient to come to collect it the following night, but the inconvenience does not make it a tzorech for Yom Tov, because Yom Tov itself, you don't need the dalad minim. So what the Rav is pointing out is if there is no explicit reason to have them at home, once you've come from shul into a private house, l'chayra, there is no heter to continue carrying them home.
For the next day, and 2 days,
no, you can't. One day cannot prepare for the next day. It has to be for that day itself.
You have to go back.
You have to go back and pick them up. Yeah. You have to go back and pick them up.
Don't take it home for your wife.
If the wife needs it, then someone needs it at home. Yeah. If she needs it, then that's the toilet. Yeah. It's a toilet. Sorry? But if she's got the minig that she does it, then one can take it home, or for Mrs. Kinnock, one can take it home. Even if she, that's still a toilet. Yeah. It's still going to be used. Yeah. The Esrig. The Esrig has got a shear. The shear of the Esrig is kebeitza, which according to the Chazon Ish is 100 gram, according to Reb Chaim Noor is 57.6 grams. Now, there is a machlokes why the Esrig has got the shear. What is this shear for? Some poskim hold the shear is in order to show that the peri is finished, Gemal peri. Some hold that it is a shear, like Kezias Matz has got a shear, and other mitzvahs have got a shear. This is a shear in the mitzvah, not to show anything at all, but it's an halacha mitzvah as other shiurim are. Now, the difference between these two shittas is that there is something called Vasa Esrogim. People who live in Eretz Yisrael are very familiar with that. People who live in Chutz Lotz are less familiar with that. Vasa Esrogim means literally water Esrogim. Esrogim grow in a number of waves, periods, on the tree. Some Esrogim are ready to be picked towards the middle of the summer, or the end of the summer, August time. Other Esrogim are not ready at all to be picked. And of course, the Esrogim Sofrim want the Esrogim to be available roughly from Rosh Hashanah onwards, because after Sukkot nobody is all interested in them. So what they do is they heavily water the pardesim. The groves are watered 4 or 5 times more than what they normally would take during the latter part of August to get them ready in time for the Rosh Hashanah rush. What happens is that the esrog literally explodes. It puffs up because of this overwatering, and it looks very, very big and juicy. However, as soon as it's cut off and the source of water is denied, then the esrog starts to shrink. And one, if one buys an esrog which originally was a borderline shear, when it comes to yontif, it's going to be below the shear. Now the poskim argue as to what the halacha is if the esrog originally had the shear and then went down to below the shear. Those who hold that the time of the shear is because of Gemar Peyre say that once we saw it was finished, it was finished. What happened afterwards doesn't interest us. But those who say that you need the shear because it needs to have a shear, like other mitzvahs have got a shear, then that shear must be there whenever you want to make the bracha on the esrog. Now the way to overcome this problem is, since it's very difficult for a non-expert to know if this is from the first wave or the second wave, and to know is there a chance of shrinkage, is not to buy an esrog which is a borderline case. It should have 10-20% more than whichever shear you're going for. So for instance, if you're going for the chazanish of 100 gram, so buy it close to 120 gram to make sure that the shear is there, the chol hadayis, on the first day of Yom Tov. Now the color of the esrog, api halucha, is supposed to be a wax-like yellow color. That is the hiddedika color of the esrog. Now this color has another benefit as well. The benefit is that there are poskim who completely dismiss the whole problem of blood flecking. There's some poskim that make a difference between the blood fleck, which is on the as if it was part of the esrog, and there's some blood flecking which are raised from the esrog, but if you run your fingers over them you can actually feel the bump of the blood fleck. However, the Shulchan Aruch Harav says that the blood fleck is not a problem because it is part of the color of the esrog. Now if the esrog is very green and your blood fleck is going to be very yellow, then it doesn't lose itself in the background. If your esrog is yellow, then you really have to stare at it and revolve it very slowly in your hands to catch the blood flecking, which does not negate then from its hiddah. So the etzah is to turn the green esrog into a yellow esrog. Now the green esrog has got another chasum, because if it's green as in leek green, as in the vegetable leek, it is pusul. And the poskim are surprised and they say ein ho'olam nizhorim bezeh. People seem to ignore this, and they don't know why they ignore it, because very green is a pusul mara on the esrog. Now the way to overcome this is to buy a few yellow apples. It doesn't work with green apples, it only works with yellow apples. The yellow apples have a natural gas inside them, and when they're enclosed together with the esrog, if you put them in a plastic bag and seal it and leave it for 24 hours, the esrog will then start to become yellow. Even if it's not yellow when you take it out, the acceleration will have started. However, it's important to make yourself some reminder not to leave it longer than 24 hours in this bag, because this same gas that turns the yellow, the esrog yellow, also loosens the pitum. And if you leave it for a day or two, you could find yourself with a very yellow esrog, but having lost its pitum. So if you go in for this, it's very important to remember not to leave it for more than 24 hours sealed. Some people are concerned about this, and they put it in a fruit bowl together with yellow apples, in order that the gas shouldn't be so intensive as it would be if it's sealed in a bag. Now, there are a number of maras, of colors, that are possible in the esrog. One everybody knows, of course, is black. The other is dark brown, dark red, green we've talked about, and also white. Now, white and black, the experts claim, are very often a residue from the sprays that the esrogim are sprayed with to stop infestation. However, one has to be a real expert to be able to tell the difference, and most are not experts can tell the difference. One way is that if you wipe it, a good idea is to take a sort of a Q-tip into dip it in a bit of warm water and to lightly rub the surface of the esrog where there is this mara that's disturbing you. If it's an insecticide, it could well come off. There's white one often finds little pockets of white which is a leftover from insecticide. Now, there is an argument amongst the Mumchim themselves whether insecticide would leave a black mark or not. Some say it does, some say it doesn't. However, most Mahirur will treat a black mark with suspicion. Now, the halacha is that in the chotem of the esrig, the mara pusl pasels bekolshu. We've soon discussed what the chotem is. It pasels with the smallest amount. The smallest amount means the smallest amount visible to the eye when one holds the esrig not close, but at arm's length with a slight bend in the elbow. I've heard that recently in Eretz Yisrael, everything now has measured shiurim, and this has now also been given a measured shear. I'm not sure the source of this, but they say that it is roughly 30 centimeters away from the eye. So if you hold the esrig at arm's length with a slight bend in the elbow, and you revolve the esrig and you slowly turn it, if you do not notice it, then it's not marked that part of the esrig. And you get she'alim who come along, and it takes them a few minutes to find the shaila. Now that is certainly not a shaila whatsoever of a mara, because if it would be a shaila of a mara, you would have to be able to spot it very quickly, otherwise it's not considered a mara at all.
Black mark is a chusa, or not a chusa, it's just a mistake in itself.
A black mark, some tana that it is the insecticide has eaten away at the peel of the esrig and has buried itself inside the esrig. Some tell me that as well.
It's not a chusik, wouldn't you say a black mark?
No, a black mark depends where it is. If the black mark is on the chotem, now the chotem is there's a machloekas, there are four shittas as to where the chotem is. I try to resist the temptation of bringing with an esrig, because although everybody here would understand immediately, it would be more difficult for those who are listening in. So if you can picture in your mind an esrig, an esrig bunny kemigdal, the way an esrig should look, wide at the bottom, tapering off as it goes towards the top. When the esrig starts to lose its straightness, but it's starting to go uphill on a slight incline, that point where it starts, where it changes from straight to uphill, according to Rashi, if you were to put a rubber band, for instance, around that point, the area of that rubber band would be the chotem. And any pusler colour on that area is pusl according to Rashi. If it's higher than that, then according to Rashi it's kosher. However, the Rosh says that it's, and this is the way the Chassam Sofer understands the Rosh, and Lechayu the Bihalucha also understands the Rosh in that way, that from that point of the rubber band where it starts to go towards the top, so the esrig has to be going straight up and then it takes the curve and it starts to curve in towards the top, so from that point where it changes direction and starts to taper off towards the top until the pitum, that whole nose of the esrig, is the chotem, and any mark, even the slightest mark which is visible to the eye, if it's black or dark red or dark brown or white or very very green, is a pusula mara, and that puzzles the esrig. The Chassam Sofer says that shitta is the shitta of most moira harua. That's been accepted, the shitta. There are two more shittas. One is shitta harambam, that it's on the actual stalk of the chotem, is the actual stalk of the pitum itself. And the Ran holds that it's a tiny circle at the base of where the pitum meets the esrig. So those are the four shittas. The bit round the middle where it changes and starts to go towards the top, or from there, from that point until the pitum, or the pitum itself, or the area around the pitum. Most Mararua take that it's from where it starts to go towards the top until the top. This is something that one needs to be familiar with, because this is the area, of course, where the black marks, which is normally the problem, occur. The reason for this din is that Chazal held that the chotem is where the eye focuses on when it sees the esrig for the first time, and the Rishonim argue what that point of the chotem is. So because the eye focuses on it, that's why it's more sensitive than other areas of the esrig. Now, the pitum itself, if the pitum falls off, whilst it's growing, and this happens very often because the estric is a very sensitive tree, it's a very sickly tree, it doesn't have a lifespan of more than 12 years. That's why there used to be a tendency to be marked as sroigim. Now, because of the shalem, it rarely happens. However, whilst we're on the subject of harkova, one has to buy an etrog from a reliable hersher. And there's a few reasons for that. The chashash harkova is one of them, but there are other reasons as well. And one of the reasons is because etrog, in order to be yotzer the mitzvah, has to have a heter achila. That means you must be allowed a pi halucha to be able to eat this etrog. If you can't eat it, you can't be yotzer the mitzvah on it. Now, an etrog that has got a problem of ala, which is a very major problem in Eretz Yisrael, because the sroigim trees are so shvach and they don't last for more than 7 or 12 years, there is a tendency to keep on replanting because the grove owners want to make sure that they have enough trees to supply the demand. So the Hashedim are very busy on this to make sure that the trees have gone out of ala. That means what they normally do is they plant it a month before Rosh Hashanah, then that month is considered the first year, and then 3 years after that, so it's really 3 years and a month. They used to, the good Hashanah used, no, then you've got Neter Avar, you've got Neter Avar as well. Now what they used to do is, they used to have a jumble of trees on the groves, and the Mashgichim used to have mats that this tree died and was replaced by a newer tree which hasn't come out of Ola yet. And it got very, very confusing. And especially when the pickers used to come along and used to pick from all the trees that had Esrogim on them, it was difficult to control whether Ola wasn't falling in amongst other Esrogim. If the Esrog is from Ola, or indeed if the Esrogim has al tevel, if Tumas and Mousas were not removed, you're not Yotzer to the mitzvah with them. So this is very, very serious, and that's one of the reasons why one must make sure one has a reliable Hersher. Nowadays, the reliable Hersherim no longer allow this, and you cannot plant a new tree amongst other trees. All the trees that are on one area must be of the same age. And to overcome the problem, they put in, because very often trees that are planted die, so they plant a few trees on the same spot to overcome this problem, that if one dies off, they've got another one going, because otherwise the Rav HaMakshe would not allow them to chop and change in the same area to have some trees younger and some trees that are already kosher. You have to rely that the Tzurich is honest and that he's got a Hersher.
I haven't met an honest one yet.
And you have to rely, if he shows you a letter that the Tzurich that he's been supplied have got a Hersher, a reliable Hersher, then the Chora one relies on them. Now, the pitten that falls off during the lifetime on the tree is not a problem. The problem is if it falls off later on. If it falls off later on, it's puzzle. The Mishabuddha says that we don't make a bracha on it on any day of Sukkot, even the other days as well. Now, a common shaila is, you buy an esrig, it hasn't got the pitten. Is this pitten off the esrig original, or is it something that's happened subsequent to cutting? A simon is, and one can learn to be able to identify it, is that if the area of the pitten, particularly if it's a crater, like a well, and one can see that it's been covered by a scab, that could only heal itself on the tree. It cannot possibly happen later on. So if one sees that there's a scab-like skin covering the area where the pitten came from, then it's certain that this happened on the tree, because the pitten comes off on many a sroigim very early, because if it doesn't get the right amount of nourishment, as it's so sensitive, the first thing that falls away is the pitten. So many a sroigim don't have a pitten, but if it happened whilst it was in the early stages of growing, it then heals itself by covering that area with this small brown scab, and it's quite easy to identify. And then it's kosher, one can make a bruchah
with a
chilah. It's a hiddah to have an esrog with a pitten, it's a hiddah to have an esrog with a sheshanta, which is the crown on top.
So, is a chus in an esrog with a pitten?
Sorry?
So, is a, What's wrong with it?
It's a chutzah. Yeah, it's
chutzah. But the chutzah on the tree doesn't matter to me. Is that correct?
If it sticks itself on the tree, then it's not a chutzah.
It's not a chutzah. Yeah. Even though it's got the same statement would happen on the tree or on the tree. On the tree, it cannot become a chutzah.
If it repaired itself on the tree, it's no longer a chutzah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How do I look though? You said because you said you got
scared.
Yeah, is that correct?
Sorry?
You'll
see a brown skin covering the area of the pitter. Yeah. If it looks very raw, like when you pull a stalk out of an apple, then you'll be sure that it's happened after it's been cut down from the tree. I just want to finish off with an interesting medrash. The medrash says, of course, we do not know the Talmud HaMitzvah of the Dalad Minim. However, the medrash gives a mussel. And the Medrash says that somebody who's been judged by the king and found to be innocent then says to the king, when I come out of the court, I want everybody to be absolutely certain that I'm innocent. How can I show everybody that I'm innocent? So the king says, here is my sword and scepter, and if you go outside and you appear on the steps of the court holding the king's sword and scepter, everybody will see that you'll be pronounced innocent. The Medrash says, Kach Yisroel, Knesset Yisroel that was standing in the Yom HaDin in judgment, and now the Umos HaOlam are wondering what was the outcome of the case. So they take Shalvitei Shemelech, the Adalad Minim is the sword and scepter and the medals of the king, and with that we show that we Yotzo Zakai B'din. I shall help you shall be very good to make see the toy very good given to you.
Extremely clear.
Quickly to cover, day one was to clear the decks, to clear the machshavas. Day two was to prepare the davening and to stop occasionally and think about it. Day three was to feel the need of power. Day four was understanding the meaning, the origin and structure of tefillah. Day five, we said, is the hiddur of davening from a siddur. Day six yesterday was to retrain our habits, that the bad habits should become good habits. And today it says find joy. We're on page 35 of the Varni Tefillah booklet. He starts off there with the Gemara. The Gemara in Brochus says, "A noindim lis fallo, that a person should not get up in order to daven, lo mitoch atzlus, not from sorrow, but lo mitoch atzlus, laziness, laughter, sichas, conversation, kalos roshes, levity, and devorim b'kelim, elo mitoch simchos shel mitzvah." He says the Iyun Yaakov brings down that all those other things disturb kavona and tefillah, but simcha shel mitzvah is what we need in order to have kavona and tefillah. The shaila is, what is simcha shel mitzvah? So Rashi says that Simcha Shel Mitzvah is the Shevach that we say like Ashrei Yoshrei V'Yisecho, and the Divrei Tanchumim that we say like Ritzon Yireh Yaseh and Shlema Hashem Et Kol Ohavav. And then Rashi also brings down, and that's why we're Masmich Geulot L'Tfilot. He brings down that various people say that the various things about, we're turning over the page now onto page 35, that the Ramah says that Pikudi Hashem Yeshraim Asam Chelev, the fact that I have the ability to daven should give me a simcha. The Mesillas Yeshraim says that a person should feel privileged to daven. And he brings down from Rav Shimon Pinkas that Shimson David Pinker, sorry, that a person untouched by joy as he prays, he's lacking. Somebody who doesn't have that feeling of joy is missing something. So the shaila really is, what is this simcha shel mitzvah that I have when I daven? Why is davening causing me simcha? And the answer that he gives here effectively is that, you know, there used to be an advert for the AA, I know a man who can. Yeah, if you have access, like a helpline, yeah, if you have access to help, if you know that I can get to the person or to the body, to the organization who can actually solve my problem for me, yeah, then a person has a betochen, he has an inner feeling of security. He walks around feeling, I'm not helpless because I know where to go for help, and I know that that organization or that person wants to help me and has the ability to help me. And that will give a person a feeling of simcha. And he brings some examples on page 36. He says, if you could imagine somebody who's stricken with an illness, and Rachman al-Islam, there doesn't seem to be a cure, and he's been to the doctors or something, and then he finds out that there's a new doctor that's arrived in town, or a new cure has been discovered for that illness which wasn't available till now, then suddenly his problem has been solved. I think Rabbi Dessler says that if it says in Chazal, Ein Simcha Katora Fasfetus, that there's no simcha like solving a problem, then he says there's no atzus like having a problem. That's the converse of it. But when a person feels, I have no help, I don't know where to turn, where am I going to get help, where am I going to solve my problem, then that already is, that's one of the wonderful things about certain people that are in every town. Here we've got the Chaim Eliakim, people like that. A person has Rachman al-Islam, an illness, and he's got somebody to speak to say, where do I find the right treatment, where do I find the right doctor? And the fact that a person has access to that information gives him a simcha. And then he gives the second example here, which goes over from page 36 to 37, about somebody who's trying to get a loan from a bank manager and he can't get an appointment. And he happens to meet the bank manager on the underground. And he manages to speak to him, and suddenly he's solved his problem. The bank manager says, oh yeah, I'm the bank manager and I can solve your problem. Come and see me tomorrow, whatever it is. And suddenly his problem has been solved. I met somebody the other day, many of you know him, Hershey Masher, he lives in Hendon, and he said to me his father was in the Wellington, and the private insurance company was saying, you have to get him out already, we're paying too much money, he has to move somewhere else. He said he was trying to get his father into some sort of a care home. He tried Sage, and he tried Schoenfeld Square, and he tried Jewish care, and he tried everywhere, and nobody had any space for his father. He said, we were in terrible sorts, you know, and here he's got the pressure to take his father out of the hospital, he needs the care, he needs to go somewhere, there's nowhere. And Rachman al-Islam, unfortunately, the Rebbein Shem of Geholfen, that a place became available, the Sage. And Baruch Hashem, suddenly his problem was solved. They phoned him up and they said, we now have a bed available. And suddenly the problem is solved. And when a person is the atzvus because he feels that I don't know where to turn, and then he can suddenly find that he has the help, then that is growing him a tremendous joy, a tremendous simcha in him. And he says, that's effectively the way a person ought to feel when he's davening to the Rebbein Shem. So the Rebbein Shem is interested in my tefillahs, the Rebbein Shem listens to my tefillahs, and the Rebbein Shem can and will help me. And that gives a person security, that gives him that feeling of inner security, if you like, which gives them a confidence and a joy. And in fact, if a person had that bitachon all the time, there wouldn't be problems of depression. So therefore, a person, therefore he says on the last page, that therefore a person, when he's done for the Rebbein Shem, he takes a field. I've got access, me, the Torah Mechoimer, the small me, I have access to the Rebbein Shem who can help me, and who will help me, and that should give him, that's the Simcha Shel Mitzvah. And he says, that's why we're Seinach Kula L'Tfilah, he says. That's what Rashi means when Rashi says, that I say, Asher Yisrael Yisrael, I pray to the, I thank the Rebbein Shem. I say Divrei Tanchumim, which is Shema Hashem as Kolay Avot. The Rebbein Shem will guard me. Korav Hashem l'chol korav. The Rebbein Shem will answer me, and that's why you must make Geula L'Tfilah. Because we're giving an example. We're saying Yitzias Mitzrayim and other Geulas that have happened. We daven to the Rebbein Shem. By Yishma Hashem as Narakosam, and the Rebbein Shem did help, did hear us, and did help us. And as I would say, Revolt, we're saying from that feeling of Geula, we can then go into our Tfilah with the feeling that the Rebbein Shem will help us when we daven now.
Where did you see?